So next year, a single video game is projected to generate $10 billion in revenue.
Right.
And it's all happening inside this perfectly simulated, highly secure digital city. But meanwhile, the actual foundation of the real-world internet we use every day currently has a flaw so massive that anyone with a single kilobyte of code can hijack a third of the web.
Yeah, when you put those two realities side by side, it paints a very clear picture of the current moment. We are engineering this unprecedented complexity in our entertainment, while the critical infrastructure supporting our entire digital lives is just showing severe structural fractures.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Welcome to the deep dive, everyone. We are jumping into a stack of tech updates from the June 9, 2026 edition of Tech in Morning.
Glad to be here.
The overarching theme running through every single one of these updates is the breathtaking and honestly sometimes terrifying speed of technological acceleration.
Oh, absolutely.
We're unpacking the multi-billion-dollar economics of that new Grand Theft Auto game, the massive vulnerabilities hiding in the backbone of the web, revolutionary AI coding tools, a sudden crisis in AI security, and finally, a very secret space race happening right above our heads.
And, beneath all these individual headlines is a single really fascinating story about what happens when humanity decides to prioritize velocity over everything else.
Let's start with that ultimate simulation of reality. Rockstar Games officially announced that pre-orders for Grand Theft Auto 6 begin on June 25, 2026.
The hype for this is just unreal.
Oh, totally. With the official release hitting the PS5 and Xbox Series X and S on November 19, they dropped the official cover art, bringing back that iconic neon pink and blue Vice City
Oh, wow,
aesthetic.
like featuring Lucia.
Yeah, the series' first mainline female protagonist alongside Jason. And the scale of this entertainment product is pushing the absolute boundaries of what current technology can build.
I mean, the technical specifications are staggering. We're looking at an estimated 120 plus square mile map. And they have integrated dynamic weather systems that aren't just cosmetic. They feature real-time hurricane simulations that fundamentally alter the gameplay physics and the environment.
That's insane.
On top of that, they are using AI to drive the behavior of thousands of non-playable characters, assigning them unique, evolving daily routines based on in-game events.
It is basically a living, breathing digital city. But, their business strategy is just as complex as their weather
Oh,
simulations.
for sure.
Rockstar announced they're offering free current-gen upgrades to players who own GTA 5 on last-gen consoles.
Which sounds nice on the surface.
Right. But this isn't just a perk for loyal fans. It is a massive digital Trojan horse. It's a brilliant strategy to instantly guarantee a 200 million strong player base that is locked in and ready to be monetized on day one.
Exactly. When you look past the gameplay, the corporate reality is that this isn't just a video game. It is the core financial anchor for Take-Two Interactive, pushing their market cap beyond $35 billion.
$35 billion. That's
Yeah.
just a huge number.
Industry analysts are projecting $10 billion in first-year revenue alone. And the gravity of a $10 billion launch is so immense that competitors, companies like Electronic Arts, Ubisoft, they have entirely cleared out of the fourth quarter 2026 release window.
Nobody wants to touch it.
Nobody is willing to launch a product within 2 months of this juggernaut.
They essentially own the entire holiday season.
They do, but the more profound shift is how they got here. I mean, Grand Theft Auto Online has been generating roughly $1 billion in annual recurring revenue for years now. That cash flow fundamentally changed Rockstar's business model. They evolved from a traditional studio that ships static games every few years into essentially a central bank that actively maintains and monetizes a complex digital economy.
Okay, so Rockstar is building this incredibly resilient, highly secure digital city for millions of people to play in. But outside of that game, the actual digital world we live in, the one we rely on for banking, healthcare, everything, is built on a shockingly fragile foundation.
It really is a stark contrast.
F5 Networks just disclosed two critical vulnerabilities in NGINX open source. Both of these scored a 9.2 out of 10 on the severity scale.
Yeah, a 9.2.
If you see a 9.2 on that scale, that's the kind of score that makes cybersecurity professionals cancel their weekend plans and just sleep under their desks.
Definitely. NGINX powers 34% of the web market share, so this threatens over 400 million websites.
Unbelievable.
We're talking Fortune 500 infrastructure for companies like Netflix and Airbnb. The threat involves two specific flaws. There's a use-after-free bug in the HTTP/3 protocol implementation and a heap buffer overflow in the HTTP/2 module.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. I understand how an attacker exploits a login screen, right? Like guessing passwords or stealing credentials. But the sources note this requires zero authentication, and it can be done completely remotely from anywhere on the internet.
Right.
How are they even getting in the door if they don't have a login?
Well, they don't need a login because they aren't interacting with the application layer at all. They are interacting with the foundational plumbing of the internet itself. The attacker sends a tiny payload, usually under a single kilobyte, that perfectly mimics normal web traffic.
So it just blends in.
Exactly. A standard web application firewall looks at it, assumes it's just a regular request to load an image or read a web page, and lets it right through.
Wait, so the firewall is totally blind to it?
Completely.
But what actually happens once that tiny payload gets through?
Yeah.
Like, what is a use-after-free bug in practice?
Think of the server's memory like a busy restaurant. An application asks for a table to process some data.
Okay.
The system allocates a table. When the application finishes, it tells the system, I'm done. You can free up this table. A use-after-free bug happens when the system marks the table as available, but forgets to take the keys away from the previous occupant.
Oh, wow.
So the attacker sends a request that frees up a chunk of memory, and before the system can securely reallocate it, the attacker uses their lingering access to write malicious code into that newly freed space.
That is incredibly sneaky.
And when the server inevitably tries to use that memory space again, it accidentally executes the attacker's code.
Okay, and what about the heap buffer overflow in HTTP2?
That is slightly different, but equally devastating. Imagine pouring a gallon of water into a shot glass that is sitting on a desk covered in important, sensitive documents.
It spills everywhere.
Right. It spills over and ruins everything nearby. In a server, a memory buffer is designed to hold a specific amount of data. The attacker deliberately sends too much data, overflowing the buffer.
And it overwrites the good stuff.
Yes. The excess data spills into adjacent memory spaces, overwriting the server's legitimate executable code with the attacker's instructions. In both scenarios, the attacker achieves remote code execution with the server's highest privileges.
Meaning they can quietly install backdoors, deploy ransomware, exfiltrate databases, whatever they want.
Exactly.
And because the HTTP 2 and 3 modules are enabled by default on these servers, isn't that essentially handing attackers a skeleton key to a third of the internet?
It really is. System admins have an impossible choice right now. They must patch their software immediately, updating to version 1.26.1 or 1.27.0.
And if they can't patch right away?
If their architecture prevents an immediate update, they have to go into their configuration files and completely disable HTTP2 and HTTP3, falling back on older, slower protocols just to stop the bleeding.
This creates a fascinating paradox. The underlying infrastructure of the web is incredibly vulnerable, yet the tools we are using to build on top of it are operating at light speed.
Yeah, faster than ever.
And they are increasingly being used by people who aren't even software engineers.
Which brings us to Anthropic. They just launched a feature called Artifacts for Claude Code, priced at $20 a month.
And this represents a total democratization of software development.
You literally just ask the AI to build something, and Artifacts gives you a live, interactive HTML, CSS, and JavaScript dashboard right there in a separate pane.
With true hot reloading. Right. You don't even refresh the page. You just chat with the AI. The software builds itself in front of your eyes, and then you can share it via a private URL. Here's where it gets really interesting to me. I look at this as the printing press moment for enterprise software.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because before the printing press, if you wanted a book, you had to hire a specialized monk to painstakingly write it out by hand over several months. In the digital age, if a company wanted a custom analytics dashboard, they had to hire a specialized developer to write the code.
And now you don't need the monk.
Exactly. A data analyst with zero coding background can ask Claude to spin up a KPI dashboard connected to their company's API, and they have a fully functioning interactive web app in 8 minutes flat.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the market impact of an 8-minute development cycle is profound. It directly challenges OpenAI's Codex sites.
Right.
But more importantly, it is effectively eating the lunch of specialized low-code and no-code platforms like Retool or Bubble.
Because those platforms charge, what, anywhere from $50 to $200 a month?
Exactly. Organizations are realizing they don't need to pay for a complex, specialized tool when a $20 a month AI assistant can generate a bespoke solution on demand.
But there has to be a blind spot here. I mean, if a non-technical data analyst is building API-connected dashboards in 8 minutes, they aren't checking for security vulnerabilities.
The blind spot is massive. Those shareable private URLs generated by artifacts are, from a technical standpoint, completely public.
Wait, really?
Yes. Anyone who guesses or intercepts that specific link can access the content. So if an analyst pipes highly sensitive corporate financial data into one of these dashboards and just, you know, shares the link in a Slack channel, they have unknowingly created a massive data leak.
So it's a huge risk if you aren't careful.
Organizations utilizing these rapid AI development tools must use enterprise plans that enforce single sign-on. That ensures that even if a link is intercepted, the data remains gated behind corporate authentication.
Okay, so we are handing non-technical workers a high-speed digital printing press, and the risk is that they accidentally leave the output lying around.
Yeah.
But what happens when the AI operating that press is manipulated into actively handing your company's deepest secrets over to a hacker?
Well, we are currently watching an AI security crisis unfold across the industry. Two major incidents were documented this week.
Yeah.
First, a vulnerability dubbed SearchLeak, which is CVE-2026-42824. It's a one-click phishing exploit targeting Microsoft 365 Copilot.
This is where things get genuinely wild. An attacker sends an email with a link that actually looks like a legitimate Microsoft.com domain.
Mm-hmm.
When the victim clicks it, the link contains hidden URL parameters that silently trigger Copilot. Without any warning to the user, the AI begins searching through the user's own corporate environment, their emails, their internal files, their chat logs for keywords like salary or password.
And the scary part is it does this using the legitimate access privileges of the user who clicked the link.
Right. So the AI is actually doing the hacking for the attacker.
Yeah.
It's like we hired a brilliant executive assistant, gave them the keys to the filing cabinet, but forgot to teach them not to hand the company's financial records to a random guy in the street.
It's exactly like that.
But wait, if the AI is compiling all this sensitive data in its own chat window, how is it getting that stolen data back to the hacker?
It uses an embedded tracking pixel. The attacker's malicious prompt instructs the AI to display an invisible one-by-one pixel image hosted on a server the attacker controls.
Okay.
To load that image, the AI has to request it from the attacker's server. The prompt tells the AI to append the results of the secret search to the image's web address.
Oh, wow.
So the AI silently reaches out to load a tiny blank image and in the process hands over the passwords and salary data in the URL request. The attacker simply checks their server logs and the data is sitting right there.
That is terrifyingly clever. And Copilot wasn't the only victim, right?
No. A popular AI gateway called LightLM suffered a CVSS 9.9 vulnerability chain involving path traversal.
For those of us who aren't security engineers, what exactly does path traversal look like in practice?
Normally, a server restricts an application to a very specific folder or directory. Path traversal is a technique where an attacker sends a command that tricks the application into moving up and out of that designated folder, allowing it to read files elsewhere on the operating system.
So it breaks out of its sandbox.
Exactly. In the case of LightLM, a low-privilege user exploited this to navigate through the server's backend, escalate their privileges to admin, and completely steal massive enterprise API keys.
And with those keys?
With those keys, an attacker hijacks an organization's entire AI infrastructure, racking up massive compute bills or accessing raw training data.
This raises an important question. Why is this happening across so many different AI platforms simultaneously?
Because the entire AI industry is prioritizing velocity over security. Companies are under immense market pressure to ship features. This closely mirrors the late 90s and early 2000s web development era.
When SQL injection was everywhere.
Exactly. Basic SQL injection vulnerabilities were rampant back then because developers rushed to get databases connected to websites without sanitizing user inputs. We are repeating that history, but the blast radius with AI is exponentially larger because these models naturally aggregate sensitive data.
So how do you even begin to secure it?
Organizations must adopt a zero-trust architecture for AI. You can never assume the AI has inherent permission to access data just because a user asks it a question. Input must be rigorously validated, output must be sanitized to prevent things like tracking pixels, and access controls must be continuously authenticated.
Because right now, these high-speed tools are basically blindly stumbling into massive security and optimization flaws. They process tasks linearly, essentially guessing at high speeds and failing hard when they hit an edge case.
Right.
To actually solve this, we need an AI architecture that learns from its mistakes rather than just blindly guessing.
And the ARPA framework represents a massive leap forward in that exact area. Researchers from Redmond University and Microsoft published a paper detailing what they call hypothesis tree refinement.
The benchmark results on this are just staggering. Arbor achieved an 87% success rate in complex optimization tasks, cutting the average solution time down to 4.2 minutes.
Which is incredibly fast.
It's 2.5 times better than both Claude Code and OpenAI Codex. You know, current AI models code linearly. They're like a rat in a maze that magically forgets every single dead end it hits. It runs down a path, hits a wall, fails, and just starts completely over from scratch.
It's very inefficient.
Right. Arbor is like giving that rat a GPS and a notepad.
That's a great way to visualize it. Arbor moves AI from trial and error to cumulative learning. It uses a two-tier architecture, a coordinator and multiple parallel executors.
Okay, so how do they interact?
Well, instead of predicting the next line of code linearly, the coordinator builds a hypothesis tree, basically a structured branching map of all possible solution paths. It then deploys the executors to test multiple hypotheses simultaneously.
So it is actively mapping the maze dynamically, trying several different ways out at the exact same time.
Yes. And every single parallel test, whether it succeeds or fails, sends data back to the coordinator. The system learns cumulatively. It actively prunes the bad branches of the tree so it never wastes compute on a dead end again, and it expands on the promising branches.
This takes AI from random linear guessing to systematic parallel optimization. Mm-hmm. What are the practical applications for an architecture that can optimize that efficiently?
Any field that relies on complex parameter tuning will be revolutionized. We are talking about drug discovery, material science, quantitative finance. Complex tasks that currently take days or weeks of trial and error could be systematically optimized by Arbor in a matter of hours.
Wow.
And the research team is actually expected to release this as an open source framework in the third quarter of 2026.
We have spent this entire time talking about optimizing the digital world. But this exact same drive for efficiency and velocity is being applied to the ultimate physical high ground.
It certainly is.
We're talking about a very physical, very secret global competition happening in orbit. SpaceX is launching the NROL 179 mission, sending a batch of U.S. spy satellites from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California.
And Vandenberg's geographic location on the California coast is critical for this. It is positioned perfectly for launching payloads south over the open ocean into polar orbits.
How does a polar orbit differ from a standard launch, and why do spy satellites need it?
Well, if you launch a satellite eastward from the equator, it generally just orbits around the Earth's middle. But a polar orbit trajectory goes north to south, passing over the Earth's poles.
Okay.
As the satellite loops from pole to pole, the Earth physically rotates beneath it. Over time, like a rotisserie chicken turning under a fixed camera, every single square inch of the planet eventually passes under the satellite's view. It is the only way to achieve true global monitoring.
And these satellites are being launched for the National Reconnaissance Office, the NRO, which, fun fact, wasn't even officially acknowledged to the public until 1992.
Right, highly classified.
Today, they operate the world's largest reconnaissance satellite constellation, capable of reading license plates from space and detecting underground nuclear tests. But there is an undeniable irony here, isn't there? We're using reusable Falcon 9 rockets, a technology literally designed to democratize and open up space to everyone to launch highly classified spy satellites.
Well, the geopolitical reality is that a new space race for orbital dominance is underway. And looking at the numbers, the United States currently maintains approximately 150 to 200 active reconnaissance satellites.
Works.
China operates roughly 80 to 100, and Russia maintains between 60 and 80. But the critical factor driving this massive launch cadence isn't just new sensor technology, it is raw cost efficiency.
Because before SpaceX, the NRO relied on legacy aerospace contractors like United Launch Alliance.
Exactly. A United Launch Alliance Delta 4V heavy rocket cost upwards of $400 million per launch. A SpaceX Falcon 9 launch cost approximately $67 million, and the booster lands back at Vandenberg to be refurbished and flown again.
That is a massive price drop.
Reusable rockets have entirely changed the economics of global surveillance. When launch costs drop by 80%, nations can rapidly expand their orbital sensor networks at a fraction of the historical budget.
So what does this all mean for you listening to this right now?
Mm-hmm.
We've covered massive ground today, from the simulated $35 billion reality of GTA 6 to the fragile reality of NGINX vulnerabilities threatening a third of the web.
We really went everywhere.
We did. We saw how fast we can build with Claude artifacts, the security nightmares of AI phishing, the evolution of Arbor, and the orbital dominance of the NRO. In a world moving this fast, your superpower isn't just knowing how to use these new tools, but understanding their hidden costs and vulnerabilities.
And if I may, consider this one final synthesis.
Go for it.
We just talked about the Arbor framework systematically optimizing complex problems by learning from every single data point, never forgetting a dead end. And we discussed the NRO expanding a global net of spy satellites.
Yeah.
What happens when a cumulative learning AI like Arbor isn't just used to write code, but is deployed to optimize global, real-time satellite surveillance?
Oh, wow.
We might be building a machine that never forgets a single movement on Earth.
A machine with a perfect cumulative memory of reality. That is a chilling thought to leave you with, but an important one. Stay curious, keep asking questions, and keep exploring. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.